My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
In life, some days are good, and some could be better. The same is true for recovery. Both take work. Both take adjustments. Finding your path is a key part of your journey, and then it's all about walking it every day. Embrace the good days, the not so good days, and the challenges, and acknowledge how you overcame them. Be open to every part of the journey and welcome it. It's unique, and it's all part of you. Find the path to recovery that works for you. Learn more at cdc.gov/stopoverdose.
It's a good thing baseballs already have stitches, because the way these ball players are hitting them, yeah, they'd need stitches if they didn't already have them. So the next time you're watching a poor little baseball smacked off the wall in center, keep that little fella in your thoughts. It's hard to be a baseball right now. Baseball is something else. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Welcome to the Deceptively Fast Podcast. We've got my friend Drew Hodgson here today, who just turned 40. We wish him a happy birthday, and I think it's appropriate to talk to him about this next topic, because Drew is very, very single. I'm very, very married. I've been married for 20 years. Drew, I'm assuming you had relations with one or many people last night. So as you celebrated your birthday, because this is an article that caught my attention, called "Why Do Humans Keep Trying and Failing at Monogamy? Here's What Science and History Says." It's an article in The Independent by Dr. Kate Lister. Are you trying currently to be monogamous? I don't even know what your relationship status is.
I'm not making an active effort to be monogamous right now. But I'm also not in a relationship. I'm not actively dating anybody. So that's actually going really well for me.
Okay, so this is where your expertise comes in handy. Because back when I was single, dating apps, I don't think we even had anything that was called an app yet. We just had online dating services, and they weren't nearly as accepted in mainstream as they are now. But this article starts off by saying that according to the dating app field, there's been a dramatic surge of interest in couples opening up their relationships and exploring non-monogamy. And that since the lockdown was lifted, the app has seen a 400% increase among women keyword searching for ethical non-monogamy and polyamory. Does that match your experience?
Yeah, I haven't ran the numbers, but according to just my anecdotal experience being off and on the apps for a long time, too long to admit, probably.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's no doubt that that's definitely what it looks like. I mean, you see, I just remember when it first became a thing, when the apps really first became a thing, you would not see anybody posting openly on their profile that they're polyamorous, that they're looking, you know, to bring in a third party.
Yeah.
They're living like in an open relationship or anything to that effect. And now, I mean, it's commonplace for sure. It's definitely commonplace.
So from both men and women, it seems like before there'd probably be a whole lot of bros that are like, "Oh, I'm polyamorous." That's a more elegant way of saying I like to sleep around. But you feel like it's men and women.
Oh, definitely. Yeah, for sure. I mean, more so than I had ever seen before. Now it's common.
Have you clicked on any of them that are polyamorous, or have you actually gone out with any of them?
I'm sure I have. I can't think of, I mean, have I swiped right on a hot polyamorous girl? Well, 1,000,000%.
Yeah.
I don't know if I actually went on a date with any, to be honest with you.
That's where it gets interesting. And there's a couple things in here about polyandry, which is when women have multiple husbands and male lovers. And that's very, very rare in societies like throughout history. says throughout the ancient world, men were expected to take a wife, but have sexual relationships outside of that with slaves, concubines, harems, mistresses, etc. That's a system known as, I think, polygyny. So that's when the man can have multiple partners. Polyandry is when the woman's allowed to have multiple partners. But I think usually what they drive at here is that in most societies, there's at the very least some pair bond, like P-A-I-R, not the fruit, but a pair of people. There's a pair bond where people try to be monogamous with each other for at least a little stretch of time. Like that it's that's pretty consistent. But the first knee-jerk reaction is, okay, from an evolutionary standpoint, why is that good? Because isn't diversity best? Isn't it best to have as much mixing up as possible? I think the most accepted theory is that basically with humans, little human babies are very helpless. And that if you want to be able to take care of a little human baby, it's probably good for the gene pool if there are a bunch of males that are willing to stick around for a while and help the babies out. I remember learning that back in college. And according to this woman, that's still the most accepted theory. That seems to make sense, doesn't it?
Well, it also just feels like there's an element of common sense there. I mean, even if you're telling me that, you know, it's Darwinism and trying to, you know, diversify the gene pool and everything else that goes along with that, I buy it. But there's just a matter of practicality. Right. I mean, you need someone, especially, I'm sure, you know, in another era, you need someone there to be a provider while you're weakened from probably the birthing process and taking care of someone and other things. So it's just a matter of what's pragmatic it makes sense to do that.
It was very hard in prehistoric times to get a spinal tap or any kind of anesthesia. Right, they were those women had to, you know, to chuck that thing out onto the forest floor. You're right about that. But that was, the thinking is that as humans started to walk erect, their pelvises got more narrow, and that's why we have our babies when they're still so incapable. You know, really, any human babies are pretty damn weak and flimsy compared to other mammal babies. They can come out and at least maybe walk around a little bit. Puppies, I guess, are a little, you know, but there's compared to other primates and everything, human babies need a lot of help. So yeah, you want genetic diversity, but it's all lost if the babies are getting snatched up or beaten by rival males or whatever. So I think that makes a lot of sense. And I think there's other studies that show that, like, that 7-year itch might have a basis in biology, in that, like, okay, oh, like around 6 or 7 years old, the kids are okay to fend for themselves, and then maybe it's time for partners to diverge.
Yeah, but isn't it human nature too to just, like, I mean, you can compartmentalize whatever your sexual desires are separate from, you know, your relationship and the connection you have with the person. I mean, I'm like, that just seems like a normal. That's what I think is so interesting about all this, is the whole movement to me is kind of like just maybe some kind of passive acknowledgement that all the movies we grew up watching and everything else are just a little
Pollyanna. No, like the whole fairy tale and romantic love stuff and everything, that's all trash. You know, I think most people that have been in a long and successful marriage or a happy marriage know that it's not the daily passionate love that you feel you don't wake up every single morning next to the person next to you and feel the same way you did like in the first 2 or 3 months of the relationship.
Seth doesn't love his wife.
You forge a relationship over time, right? You know, that becomes like, it's a healthy codependence. But I think like with you and all of your little good time buddies running around calling each other polyamorous and everything.
Good time buddies.
And I'm talking about your good time female buddies. I like to envision you as just going from one orgy to the next on the weekends.
Exhausting. Yeah.
You've got a planner book and everything, and you have to be sure that you have hors d'oeuvres and all that stuff.
Yeah, I definitely keep track of all my orgy schedule in my written planner is how I keep track of that. And it's exhausting. Hashtag polygang.
No, the thing that's changed is you got to remember there was no actual like good birth control in the 1960s. So yeah. It's been, you think about it in the grand scheme of things, we've only had two or three generations since people really started to be able to have a say in, you know, how many sexual partners they can sleep with before they inevitably knock somebody up. And with women, especially, women have some say and control now in whether or not they get pregnant. So that you'd figure, all right, maybe that is just the natural progression is over the course of several generations, you know, by three generations from now, people are going to have a much different view of like, how is sex tied to a relationship?
Yeah.
And like, how can they exist differently than we'd basically been trained to for millennia?
Yeah. I mean, it just feels like multiple things. It's a confluence of events where this is purely my, as a single male, now 40, my entire life, never married, no kids.
Yeah.
You know, it feels to me like it's both an appreciation for maybe a different kind of lifestyle that can work. I've never really tried it, but I mean, I'd be open to it if it could actually be functional with the right person. But it's one of those things where it's that in addition to a completely different tolerance for like a kinky lifestyle or a more open lifestyle or however you want to frame it.
Because
like when I was growing up, it was freeze framing the one nude scene in a movie for an hour to get off. And now it's like, you can look at your mobile phone at any given moment. And so there's just the Overton window has just shifted in a big way. I think like
there was like a total of 3 seconds of Jamie Lee Curtis being naked and Coming to America, right? Where she gets into bed with Dan Aykroyd there and just to warm him up. Right. And that was like, oh, that was a big, big deal when you could see that. So
it was the most scandalous thing ever. I mean, it was like, you know, they still like freeze that image and put it all. It's ridiculous.
Yeah. So I guess there was more of a notion of almost like the scarcity of sex too, compared to what kids are growing up with now, where it's omnipresent all the time.
Completely accessible. And so,
changes your expectations, but there's always going to be like, I don't know. I feel like the double standard is hardwired into men though. Is it it seems like every culture almost has some semblance of that in some version of the male double standard where
it feels like a lot of that's kind of melted away though a bit. I mean, I agree with you that it's still going, it probably is just always going to be like the predominant outlook, but it's shifted, I think, quite a bit. Like, I think that, you know, it's relative to that kind of fragile masculinity and all that stuff, but there's more of an appreciation, I think, for a more maybe assertive kind of sexually open and aware woman these days than maybe there used to be.
I don't think I don't think these kids these days slut shame nearly to the level that was common, you know, when we were growing up, where it was, you know, guys wanted to have their cake and eat it too, where they would, you know, you want a woman that loves sex but only with one guy for the rest of your life. Like, it's just and that's where the double standard all falls in. I just don't see or hear as much about it the same way I can remember like my friends talking about stuff or the way they talk about women.
Yeah. That's why you and I are launching that charity, slutpraised.com. It's important. It's, I think we all need to be made more aware of it.
I think this is one thing that might be happening to you though, too, Drew. I think that the natural testosterone drop as you get closer to your 40s, I think that's a beneficial thing in a lot of ways, because I think that some guys, and this is one of the most interesting and yet insulting theories about why humans try to be monogamous. It's the theory of testes size.
Oh, nice.
That in species where females mate with multiple males, the testes tend to be larger in relation to body size. But adjusting for body size, human testes are smaller than would be predicted. So we've got like disproportionately small testicles. And when compared to our closest living relatives, are considerably smaller than those of chimpanzees. So even chimpanzees have got us outmanned on the ball sack size. So I guess so this is where I'm tying it back to you turning 40. Okay, so this article has already insulted the size of our testicles, not just you and me, but all human males. But it almost seems like, okay, if the larger the testicle size, the more women and men are are all about just like, just like they can't help themselves. Like, well, look at all these huge testicles out there.
I'm not tracking the female side. Is it saying that women are more attracted to that? Like,
that's what I just,
like,
yeah,
a, like
just
an evolutionary.
Yeah. I just realized I screwed that up. Cause you would think like, oh, bigger testicles, then the male's going to be more dominant and he wants to have multiple partners, but not necessarily allow the woman.
Right.
So yeah, that doesn't make, it doesn't make a lot of sense. Cause what I was going to say is in humans, I do think that some guys, I think, like, are just naturally more cool with settling down when they're in their 20s. And maybe that's related to testosterone levels. Maybe it's a, maybe it's a sense of security or something. Like, some guys are just more naturally wired to be happy with one person. But I think, like, I know some guys, I know some dudes that just simply had way too much sex drive to be married in their 20s. Like, they, like, they're just hounds, you know?
Yeah. And I know, why do I feel like I'm being attacked?
I'm not
being attacked
right now. I'm not talking about you specifically, but there's a continuum there, you know?
Yeah.
Well, cause it always used to bother me when I'd hear people say, like, well, you know, that guy only cheats, or that guy only wants multiple sexual partners because he's insecure, because he needs to inflate his own ego. And I think sometimes that's the case, but I also think I just know some dudes that just had to be frequently doing stuff. And but then that some of those guys that I know, I think they genuinely settle down when they're into their 40s and their priorities change. And I think at least some of that's got to be related to like testosterone levels. Maybe they also, you know, get a more confident sense of self along the way. But I think way more of that is wrapped up in our hormone levels than a lot of people want to admit. I think there's more nature in that. Yeah.
Yeah. For both genders, really, too. I mean, I think you see the same thing where women really kind of come into it maybe a little later, too. And they become more confident. I don't know if it's directly tied to hormone levels, but.
Yeah. The younger. Well, yeah, there's studies that show that like younger women are more attracted to physical traits, whereas they get a little bit older, they tend to be more attracted to the, like, the classic provider traits, you know, the confident guy that's got whatever. I don't know. I also get a sense in this article, this woman, I feel like she's one of those people who feels like everybody's private life must be like hers. And if it's not, then they're just lying. You know, like people that cheat assume that everybody's cheating, or, you know, like if you're a big time drinker, you can't conceive of how somebody doesn't like drinking all the time or doesn't like to go out or what have you. And they probably know people in their private lives that lie about like exactly what their private lives are. But I don't think that's the case. I think there's a broad continuum. I think I know people that got married when they were 18 that were like completely and totally devoted to each other and happy the entire time. Where I know, like, if I'd gotten married at 18, it wouldn't have mattered. My current wife, if I married her when I was 18, Brandy would have left me, I would say, by the time I was 18 and a half.
Right.
I just wasn't ready for it. I think by the time I was 28 or 29, I totally was.
Yeah, I completely agree. It's sort of like I agree with the overall premise of the article and a lot of the stuff that is outlined. I just don't know that I'm tracking the tone, because it does feel like she's positioning it like that's maybe her personal experience that she's trying to, you know, project onto everyone else.
Did you catch the part where she brought up about, and this isn't, I'm not criticizing her about this at all, but where she brought up the sultans of the Ottoman Empire enjoyed a harem of several thousand women, at times as large as 15,000.
Yeah.
Who in turn had to remain faithful to their lord or risk being put to death. I can't imagine anything worse in life than having thousands of concubines. I don't get that. I don't understand unless, and especially, I don't get that. I don't, not thousands. That's too much.
But that's like one of those where, you know, what is the rule where it's like, no matter how many, whatever the number is, a man says that he slept with, multiply it by three. And if it's like a woman, you like divide it by three or whatever it is. That guy 100% just wanted to go down in history as the most prolific emperor ever. And then just multiplied his number of concubines by 10,000.
That's true. Because and you know what, too?
You just can't tell me. He just wanted him to be a legend.
Part of expressing your power back in that day and retaining your power was showing, like creating these myths about you. So probably
yeah, but your virility.
Having a 15,000 concubine harem, like people would just think there, you know, there'd be all kinds of legendary tales of him pleasuring 200 women per night and everything. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah, we can't invade that country. That guy's libido is far too potent.
We should start that rumor about you. I think it would help you in business.
Look, I'm okay with that. If you want to post on my Wikipedia or on my LinkedIn, you can add, actually, you can go ahead and just, you can endorse my skill set for polyamory and prolific sex acts.
On you don't actually, you don't actually want that reputation. I had, when I was in high school, and I was, I swear, when I was in high school, I was still a virgin, and somehow, and to this day, I still don't know how, somehow I got the reputation of being like this incredible stud. And I had a nickname, the 60 Minute Man. And I have like there were stories told about me that were like legendary. And I had nothing to do with it.
It's amazing.
Like my girlfriends, like friends that were girls would tell me that, like, they'd be like, well, Seth, you know, like, this girl really likes you, but she just doesn't want to be another notch in your bedpost. And I'm like, I have no notches.
I don't have a zero notch
in my bedpost. I got like,
I'm notchless.
Unless I'm doing notches for masturbation episodes or something. Like, I got
the self-love bedpost has been whittled down to a toothpick.
But that's on my I put those on my baseball bat. Looks like a beaver got to it. That thing's got so many notches. But yeah, so I don't think you necessarily want to have that reputation. Of course, older, it doesn't. Girls aren't as scared off by that, you know, because they know what they're doing. They might, you would have a certain niche. You'd have a niche on the internet of women that are like,
I think at 40, you're kind of, you're really driving like a weird niche to come to you. If that's your big, my big draw is that I'm just all over the map with every woman that comes within eyesight.
There's, so I think basically what I took from this mostly, Drew, is that there is, you always run into somebody that's either going to claim that, you know, God wants humans to be monogamous, or on the opposite end of the spectrum, no, humans are wild beasts and it doesn't make any sense. They shouldn't be monogamous. I think there's evidence that it is somewhere in between, and that, like, within humans, there is a drive to be monogamous. It's just that it takes a little bit more than just that drive to stay together for a long time. We're driven to be monogamous, like, for at the very least a brief duration of time, and then if it's going to extend beyond that, it's got to have involved something more than just, you know, that desire.
To your point earlier, though, like, what percentage of your guy friends do you think would actually be okay with an open relationship where their wives were engaging on the same level that they were? Like, what percent?
Very few.
Like less than 10%,
like on the same level as what they in their minds are envisioning.
Yes,
like I think most guys think about an open marriage and it's like, yeah, it'll be orgies, then I'll go on business trips. It'll be my thing. But they're kind of like they want it to be like a Tony Soprano type thing, you know, where Carmela's back and cooking and doing all those things. They don't really think it through. I don't think it's very high, man. I don't know. Like, I've thought about this before, and I've tried to be like, okay, I've tried to put myself in that position and thought, like, like, could I be one of those guys who's genuinely not jealous of anything my wife did? And there's no way. I don't think I can get there. And I don't, I've tried to peel back the onions or the onion layers and see if that's like just because of the way I've been raised or cultural cues or anything. And I don't think it is. I think it's something natural and innate.
It's like, where does that come from? Like, where is that feeling of like, I don't even want to call it insecurity, but whatever that violation is. That,
well,
like,
the guys that are cool with it would claim that it's insecurity if you can't, but I don't know.
Right.
It's too overwhelming. And I think when you look at it from society to society, culture to culture, historically, it's present everywhere. So like, I don't think it's fair to say that it's some insecurity. Maybe it's a natural and normal insecurity, but I don't think it's something that's necessarily, I don't think it's necessarily unhealthy. It's
weird because you know that men tend to be, just to broadly generalize all genders, is that they can compartmentalize more on that front. maybe generally than it seems like women can, right? So it's like they can tell themselves, that's fine, this is just the physical part. But when you're looking at like an open relationship, it's interesting when you see women that are completely comfortable and able to do that more safely and have more comfort with it than men do. Like, that is an unusual dynamic. Whereas like the dudes, I feel like you're still got to be like numbing that part of your brain to where maybe you're kind of killing the intimacy, like you're killing the connection a little bit to be able to make it work. You know, I don't know if you
and
can.
So how are women different? What are you saying?
They seem to be able to kind of do it, I think, if they can effectively have it.
Still have the emotional compartment part of it.
And not have to kind of murder the emotional connection. But I think like dudes, in my experience anyway, it'd be hard for me to do it without also kind of killing the connection, you know.
Now wait a second. So I guess, but you're saying killing the connection with the let's call the person that you're supposed to be monogamous with, or your total mate, your person A. And then person B is the person that you'd be having an affair with or something. You're saying you have to kill a little bit of the emotional connection to person A. To be able to be with B.
Framed that for person A, my partner, for me to be totally cool with us both having other partners, especially with them having a consistent relationship or, you know, physical connection with someone else.
Yeah.
I have to kill a little bit of that emotional connection to A.
Yeah. Yeah.
For that, like, I don't fully know how you can do that without it, because to your point, it deeply it gets you somewhere in there. And I don't know how to keep that voice out of your brain without kind of murdering that, that emotional connection.
But I wonder if that's okay. Maybe that's a little part of why men, or at least one of the reasons why men seem to be less, I don't know if anyway, it's weird because there's still a part of me that doesn't believe anybody's totally cool with any of it. Like on the polyamory side, like it's just, it's just hard for me to empathize, like not being jealous. So I want to get in there, these people's heads and believe that it's true or what have you. But I wonder if part of male jealousy is also knowing that women tend to form more of an emotional connection if they're having sex with somebody, and that like, so if you think about your female partner being with somebody else, you think like, well, she's definitely forging some kind of an emotional bond with that dude as well. Or are we more limited and simple than that?
I don't, that's interesting. I mean, maybe that's why I'm single. No, I don't know. I mean, I think that that's also a pretty broad spectrum. I think there's plenty of women who don't necessarily have that tact.
Listen, Drew, you just turned 40.
I did.
I'm going to tell you this on your 40th birthday. The pair bond is a ubiquitous feature of human mating relationships. That's what I want you to tell your future wife when you propose to her. You say, I've fought this a long time, but listen, I finally acknowledge that the pair bond is a ubiquitous feature of human mating relationships. Will you be my pair bond partner?
Yeah. Why do I have to do that? Why can't it? That's like a first date thing, isn't it?
Let's establish it right then.
That's more of a like upfront. I want to get this out of the way. And I've been dying to use the word ubiquitous.
How do you feel about pair bonding? Yeah. Oh. Okay. One more before we go. This is the one theory that I found most intriguing. It's been suggested that humans are monogamish. That's what she uses a few times, saying like it kind of monogamous. Yeah. Monogamish because of concealed ovulation, which means there isn't any obvious sign when it's optimal baby making time. So that maybe you just got to have a guy around all the time so that when it's go time, when you're ovulating, then that guy is there. Well, meanwhile, when a female baboon is in the mood, her hindquarters swell up like a life buoy ring to let everyone know. And it did get me thinking, like, man, if you were in a bar and all of a sudden some woman's hindquarters swelled up like a life buoy ring or like a Kardashian or something to let everybody know, it would be on at that point. It would get pretty damn hectic and not very monogamous.
Or would that be like if you're looking for casual, now you know, like this probably isn't the ideal time.
That's true. Well, yeah, that's the thing, because we stick around.
Right.
ideally, at least that's the expectation, is you like hope the guy sticks around if there's a baby born. So yeah I don't know. Exactly. Yeah, I don't think it's a good okay, my idea for the life buoy swelling hindquarters to signal getting on it, Nish.
Yeah, I'm fine with it as is.
I think there used to be I think you're good. You're good. Well, happy birthday. Did you actually have a party or anything?
No, not yet. I mean, my brother is actually coming in town to visit, but I had a friend over last night and had dinner, and it was kind of low-key, but it was nice. It was good.
You know, I think
the birthday stopped really being interesting, or at least in my, old cynical view at this point. So
I think for the good of the podcast, you should start clicking on some of these polyamorous women and just to have a conversation with them.
Yeah.
You could be the classic, the guy that's like claiming he just wants to have a conversation about it. And in the
for
world
research purposes.
Yeah. In the world, according to Garp, the Robin Williams has, I think he does that. No, his mom. Okay. This guy's mom tries to buy him a prostitute. And he's like, listen, let's just have coffee or something. But I think they end up doing it anyway, because it's just, you can try to be noble and everything and do it for the good of the podcast. What comes of it comes out. We don't have to even talk about the PG-13 side of things. I just want you to get, I want you to go have coffee with a polyamorous woman.
Okay. So just to be clear, we're stopping at PG-13. So I'm going to go through all this. And then it's just going to stop at like,
I'm saying,
over the close.
I'm saying we don't have to talk about anything that happens past PG-13. Like, I already once exposed a medical issue of yours that you didn't want me to. So I don't want to go, which by the way, suggests that you would be less monogamous than a chimpanzee.
You're right.
If this testes theory works out.
Wow.
Yeah. Okay. So we'll do that.
Good callback. Nice callback.
The next time we convene, you'll have at least DM'd with a polyamorous woman on a dating app.
Yeah, no, that's a good assignment between episodes.
Oh, I'm very excited about this. All right, buddy. Happy birthday.
All right, man. Thank you.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be.
For those in recovery, support from friends and family often leads to better outcomes. Here's to those who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. Visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose for information about treatment options and how to support those experiencing addiction.
Trying to figure out what to eat for dinner yet again? With Norsides and bouillon as your not-so-secret ingredient, you can skip the drive-thru and do dinner at home. Nor Taste Combos provide a menu of delicious, affordable, and well-balanced meals that you can prepare in 30 minutes or less. Visit nor.com to get quick and easy recipe ideas for your home-cooked weeknight dinners. It's not fast food, but it's so good.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly!
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
For the first time, U.S. subscribers can stream MLB Network 24/7, including select out-of-market games.
Swing and a drive. It's deep. It's good. Yes.
Stream minor league affiliates.
Home run number one.
Horse rat pick number one.
Plus, get MLB Big Inning and live audio for all 30 teams.
Baseball can't get better than this.
Experience the game like never before with MLB Network and At-Bat, your all-in-one baseball destination. Only $6.99 per month. Visit MLB.com/At-Bat for details. Blackout and other restrictions apply. MLB trademarks used with permission.